Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents More Than a Memory by Molly McLean. Narrated by Connor Brown and Lila Winters. Prologue. 10 years earlier. Aiden.
I don't want to sneak around anymore.
Liv's words come out of nowhere, and for a minute I think I've imagined them. But the way she holds her breath and bites the plump bottom lip I just spent hours kissing promises I didn't. Still, I need to be sure.
What do you mean, babe?
Because I've been in this girl's bed and in this very position with her naked body tucked against mine so many times over the past 4 years, I've lost count.
I think you know,
she whispers, her hand lifting to my cheek. Every time we've been together, she's sworn me to secrecy. It's what we've done since she was 17 and I was 18. Since her brother, my best friend, told me he'd kill me if I touched her. She was meant for more than our small town and a country boy like me. I need you to be clear with me, Liv. I need you to say the words. Her slender neck scuffed and pink from my stubble works before she pulls in a careful breath.
No, it wasn't supposed to be this, but I think about you all the time, and I miss you when you're gone, and I...
Her eyes, suddenly full of a vulnerability, flick to mine.
I'm tired of pretending I'm not in love with you.
You love me? She nods, and I have her under me in a second, her rickety second-hand mattress squeaking beneath us. One look in her dark eyes, and it's like a bullet straight to my chest without Kevlar. All the feelings I've pretended not to have for her spill from the places I've kept them hidden, like warm blood seeping from a wound. A wound that could very well be my demise, but I don't care.
Say it again. I love you, she repeats,
and I crash my mouth to hers, claiming her confession and claiming her too. For 4 long years, I've pretended she isn't everything I've ever wanted, the only girl I've ever cared about, and the only one I've ever seen a future with. I love you, too. Fuck, Livy, I love you so much. I kiss her again and again until we're breathless.
It's almost summer break, and I'll be home in Cold Creek for my internship,
she says when she can talk again.
I want to tell Bren.
I'll do it. I'm the one who went behind his back.
You don't have to.
I need to. Because there isn't a thing I wouldn't do for Olivia Bishop. And it's time I told my best friend exactly that. Chapter 1. Present day. 10 years later. Aiden. Are you shitting me? Bren kicks back in his worn leather chair and folds his hands behind his head. I wouldn't shit you about something like this, man. I know how bad you want it. Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. As the Pine County Sheriff, he may be responsible for the safety and well-being of a hell of a lot of people. But Bren Bishop has been my best friend a lot longer than either of us has had a badge. He'd give me shit all day, every day if he could. Remember that time you lied and told me Maddie Kaminsky was waiting for me under the bleachers at the football field? I eye him warily from the other side of his cluttered desk, full of paperwork and dirty coffee mugs. Pinned to the wall behind him is an oversized paper map of the county and a dusty framed picture of his swearing-in 3 years ago. He chuckles and rocks a bit in the old squeaky seat. Damn, that was a long time ago. You were so gullible back then. Yeah, well, I was 16, and horny as hell. Don't I fucking know it, he mutters. And we both know exactly what, or rather, who, he's thinking about. So, how exactly did this come about anyway, I ask, quickly changing the subject back to the one at hand. Honestly, what he's telling me sounds too good to be true. The FBI has a ton of guys at their disposal. Why would they want me? I got a call from Special Agent Nolan last night. He said Bollinger, the agent we worked with on that kidnapping case last year, gave him your name. I guess they're looking for a certain kind of guy. Bollinger thought you'd be a good fit.
A certain kind of guy. I've been a detective with the county PD for as long as Bren's been sheriff, and a deputy for years before that. I may be good at what I do, but there are cops like me everywhere. And a lot closer to Milwaukee, too.
Did he say anything about the case?
I run a hand around the back of my neck, where the collar of my Pine County Sheriff's Office t-shirt is starting to feel like it's shrunk a size in the wash.
Not really. Just that they need to get more creative than usual with this one.
Bren scratches at his ginger stubble.
Look, I'm not thrilled about you taking leave from your role here, but I know the Bureau is your end goal. I won't be the one to hold you back from that.
Hell yeah, the FBI is my dream. But the reality is I'd have to relocate to make that happen, and I'm not keen on breaking my mother's heart like that. I also wanted to be settled with a family before I took that next step, because something in the back of my mind tells me I'd end up married to the job and miss out on the rest.
It's a temporary gig, though, I say, mostly for myself. Shit, I could get down there and they could decide they don't want me.
Bren smiles.
They want you, man. They wouldn't have called if they didn't.
Maybe. Or maybe whatever they want me to do is bottom-of-the-barrel shit that they can't get anyone else to do. I'm not saying I'm not willing to sling shit if it eventually gets me where I want to go, but I'm not going to be their bitch either.
Just go down and talk to them. See what it's all about. No harm in that.
I arrive at the FBI building just southeast of Milwaukee shortly before 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning.
The July sun is already hotter than hell, and I pray the air conditioner isn't broken inside because I'm already sweating my balls off, and it has nothing to do with the weather. I called Special Agent Nolan as soon as I left Bren's office last week, and he wasted no time telling me how badly the feds needed me. He had this meeting set up in minutes, and I suspect he would have had me come down over the weekend had it not been for the 4th of July holiday. As anxious as I am for this opportunity, something about the urgency and the senior agent's unwillingness to give me any information over the phone has sweat dripping down my back despite cranking the AC the entire 4 hours from Coal Creek. After I get through the security gate and park, I head into the building, where a preppy guy in khakis and an FBI polo greets me and immediately ushers me to a conference room with floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking Lake Michigan. He offers me a bottle of water and a seat, but I stroll over to the windows to take in the view instead. Something about water has always called to me and given me a sense of calm, which I really friggin' need right now.
Detective Enders?
A friendly male voice sounds from the door a moment later, and I turn to face a familiar smile. The tall, dark-haired agent drops a stack of files onto the conference room table with a thud and extends his hand.
Special Agent Bollinger.
I step forward to shake, already more at ease knowing he's involved in whatever I'm about to get myself into. We worked together for a couple of weeks on a kidnapping case last year, and he was an all-around decent guy. Not one of those big-dick personalities some of the federal guys like to throw around in front of us country guys as if their work is automatically more important because they're the friggin' FBI.
Glad you can make it.
Bollinger gestures toward the chair.
Have a seat and get comfortable. Special Agent Nolan is just finishing up a team meeting, so he shouldn't be much longer.
Thanks. I'd rather stretch my legs after the long drive and pace off some of this anxiety, but I grab a chair and crack open the bottle of water.
And here I have you to thank for this recommendation.
A crease forms in his brow for a moment before he gives a quick nod.
I mean, I told Nolan I'd worked with you before, but you've been specifically requested.
Detective Enders? An older man with a receding hairline and paunchy middle pushes through the conference room door dressed in a blue suit jacket and slightly darker pants. His tie is gold and flashy, and he looks like he belongs on the PGA Tour, not wearing a badge. Nonetheless, I stand and offer my hand across the table.
I'm Bernie Nolan, he says. And I believe you already know Ian Bollinger.
Yes, sir. Thanks so much for inviting me down.
A grin splits across Nolan's face, and the lines around his eyes crinkle.
Of course. But we really should be thanking you. What we're about to propose is no easy task. I didn't think it would be, but Bollinger's weird half-statement about being requested has my curiosity amped up another notch. Shall we get started? Nolan asks, and Bollinger nods as they take seats across the table from me. As you know, the FBI is typically tasked with investigating and enforcing domestic crimes. But on occasion, our office sees cases with foreign connections. You'll be working primarily with our agents, but you should know that Interpol is assisting as well. An international case? What the hell am I getting myself into? Okay. I fold my hands together on the table in front of me and wait. A couple months back, a UW Milwaukee professor was found dead outside of a warehouse by the lake. It was an execution-style hit. So he pissed someone off and they took him out. Nolan nods. He was also a Polish immigrant here on a green card, and our investigation turned up a long history of dealings with the Polish mafia. Ah, the good old Polish mob. Bryn's Uncle Joe comes to mind, but that's not something I'm supposed to know about, and I'm sure it has nothing to do with this case. Turns out he was a bookkeeper for the SSP out of Chicago. I can't remember what SSP stands for. Samowa Zaręcze Strosprawa, I interject, and he cocks an eyebrow, either surprised that I know or that I can pronounce it. Maybe both. Means vigilante. Huh. I guess that explains the Robin Hood-type crime they're known for. Anyway, they bring in a shit ton of money, but they move it just as quickly. Rumor has it they single-handedly funded, and continue to fund, the new non-profit children's hospital in Chicago. That doesn't surprise me. Joe's a good guy, if not a little rough around the edges. We haven't had a lot of involvement with them until now, Nolan says. And we're not looking to cause a fuss with them either. I nod, suspecting it's my Polish roots they want more than anything. But why not bring in Bryn? The guy was pocketing money, and the organization caught on, Nolan continues. They watched him for months and figured out he was sharing his profits with a small group of rogue members. The SSP calls them the Buntovniks, or rebels. They apparently grew tired of benevolent crime and decided to pad their own pockets instead. And let me guess, the SSP did him in to solve the problem. Nolan shakes his head. No. At some point, he quit sharing what he was skimming, and the rebel group wasn't happy about it. They took him out themselves. Great. I lean back in the chair. Sounds to me like you've got it all figured out. Bollinger clears his throat. There's still $1 million unaccounted for, and the SSP wants their money back. If it were for their own bank accounts, they'd probably let it go. But that money could go a long way in helping inner-city kids live a better life. Hearing him completely ignore the fact that the money in question is still dirty, no matter where it ends up, makes me smile. I've been known to turn a blind eye a time or two as well. Those incidents usually involve someone beating someone else's ass for doing wrong, but the principle is still the same. Not all crime is committed for nefarious reasons. So, how do I fit into this? I narrow my eyes and the agents exchange glances. Well, Nolan begins. Our dead guy left a wife. She claims she had no idea he was involved with the mob, let alone playing one side off the other. We dug into her pretty deep, and we can't find a single thing to tie her to any of it. But the rogue group doesn't agree. They've been watching her like a hawk, and they're getting antsy. Of course they are. They want their money, and they think she can lead them to it. Nolan adjusts in his seat. We have eyes on her 24/7, and so does the SSP. They think she's the way to the money, too, but they're not looking to hurt her in order to find it. Just the opposite, actually. They want to protect her, and she wants to work with him to find the money and put this all behind her. In other words, it's a clusterfuck. The problem is the rebels know she's working with both of us, and we've come to a bit of an impasse. We are not making any progress, and the longer we sit like this, the harder it's going to be to find that money. Maybe I'm missing something, but I'm still not sure how you think I can help.
Bollinger sucks in a careful breath and exhales just as slowly.
We think this guy's accomplices may have more information than they realize they do, but we can't get to it when they're so hyper-aware of our involvement. Therefore, we need to give the illusion that we're pulling back, that this case isn't a priority anymore. And that means looking like we've pulled back on the wife without actually doing so. The only way we figure we can pull it off and make it look believable is to have someone on the inside, someone that's protecting her without it being obvious.
My gut tells me I'm not going to like what comes next, but I say it anyway. And that's me. You to be her bodyguard. Nolan taps his pen on the table. But you'd need to make it look like more. If you know what I mean.
With a woman who's just been widowed?
Sounds like a horrible fucking idea.
Bollinger lifts a hand. It's either this, or we put her into witness protection, which she's already refused. She wants to help find the money, not hide.
And you're sure she's not dirty too? That she's not just biding her time until you get bored with the case?
Nolan shrugs. That's always a possibility, but her record is clean, and she seemed genuinely surprised, and pissed off, too, when she found out what her husband had been mixed up in. Between us, I get the feeling their marriage left a little something to be desired, but I'm working on my third divorce, so what the hell do I know?
Bollinger snorts and opens the folder in front of him. Here's the thing, detective. He takes out a sheet of paper and turns it upside down. She's already agreed to personal protection and doing whatever she has to do, including pretending to be involved with you.
Me personally? I laugh. Makes it sound like they've already told her about me before I even agreed to do this.
Bollinger slides the sheet across the table.
She's the one who requested you. In fact, her exact words were, I do this with Aiden, or I don't do it at all.
My blood runs cold as a memory flashes through my head out of nowhere. 6 weeks ago, Bren took time off for a family funeral. His brother-in-law's funeral. I almost laugh again at the thought of my best friend being even remotely okay with me getting anywhere near his sister. But instant rage takes over instead. She wouldn't have the audacity to ask, not after what she did to me. But sure as shit, when I flip over the paper, familiar brown eyes stare back at me. Eyes that once upon a time I swear could see straight into my soul. Eyes I swore I'd never trust again. Eyes that look terrified as hell. Olivia Bishop wants my help? Well, she can kiss my ass.
Chapter 2. Olivia. And don't forget, your final projects are due by the end of the week. I smile at my laptop screen and roll my eyes when a dozen of the students looking back at me groan in unison. Oh, come on, it's just a little paper.
About romance novels, one of the guys grumbles.
Hey, you could probably learn a thing or two. Jasmine, a young woman I've had in several of my classes, chimes in, and the other students laugh. This is where I kindly remind you that you could have taken another course this summer, Mr. Matthews. I shake a finger at him, and he gives me a sheepish smile in return. He's a good kid, though we both know he's only in my class because he thought it'd be an easy A. Anyway, I'll see you all again next Tuesday. Reach out via email if you need anything sooner. One by one, the students leave the online class, and my cell phone lights up on the desk beside me. Hey, Dr. Bishop, Jasmine speaks up again. Are you still holding virtual office hours tomorrow? I pick up the phone and my stomach clenches when I see Special Agent Nolan's name. He was supposed to meet with Aiden today, a little fact I've been trying not to dwell on since the feds told me he was coming down this week to talk. Actually, Jazz, I'm not sure. Let me get back to you on that. Sounds good. She waves and clicks out of the class, leaving me alone with a racing heart and itchy fingers.
My husband died 6 weeks ago, but the prospect of seeing my first love again is all I've thought about since the FBI suggested a bodyguard-boyfriend ruse to throw off the rebel group. Yes, I suggested Aiden. No, I didn't think there was a chance in hell he'd do it. But I swallowed my pride and threw his name out there anyway. He may hate me, and rightfully so, but he's the only one I trust enough to do something crazy like this with. Closing my eyes, I say a quick prayer and then open the message.
We met with Detective Enders today. Call me when you can.
So he can tell me Aiden laughed in his face? Great. I hit the agent's contact and put the call on speaker. He answers on the second ring.
Hey, Olivia, I hope you don't mind me reaching out so late.
It's only 8 o'clock, and it's not like I've been sleeping much anyway. It's fine, I just finished a class.
How's that going for you? The online thing, I mean.
Good, actually. I have a few young men in my courses this summer, and I think the remote option makes showing up a little more appealing. I've been teaching freshman English and a couple of 200-level literature courses at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee for 9 years. The summer sessions have always been notorious for low attendance, especially among the students who are only enrolled for the elective credits. Curiously, attendance has been up since I started teaching online instead of in person as a safety precaution not only for myself, but for my coworkers and students, too.
I'm glad to hear that. I know you weren't thrilled with the change of venue.
I wasn't, but I get it. It took me a while to accept that I needed protection, but if it means keeping others safe, I'll do whatever needs to be done, which is apparently more than Jake, my dead husband, could say.
Anyway, you know why I'm calling.
He sighs, and I hold my breath.
Special Agent Bollinger and I met with Detective Enders today, and his response wasn't what we'd hoped it would be.
Damn it. Even though I'd expected as much, the confirmation feels like a blade to the chest. Okay. I wet my lips and shove a hand through my hair as the ache of rejection begins to burn in my throat. So now what?
We'll give him some time to reconsider, but I've got to be honest with you, Olivia. I don't think he's going to change his mind.
And why would he? He begged me to change mine for months when I broke things off with him, but I never answered a single call or text. Why would I think he'd give me even an ounce of consideration now? Can we find someone else? The mere suggestion tastes like acid on my tongue. I know I wasn't interested before, but I won't go into hiding. I can't. I've worked too hard on my career, and I've come too far in overcoming my past. I will not run scared again, and I sure as hell won't be a victim.
We can review our options, but we'll need to do it quickly. Word on the street is that SSP is getting antsy. They want their money.
Should I be worried? As if I haven't been already, despite the unmarked car that's been permanently parked in front of my house for weeks, and the surveillance cameras up and down the block.
No, but the sooner it looks like we've backed off, the sooner the rebel group will come out from the shadows. That's the only way we're going to figure out what they're up to, let alone catch them.
Uncle Joe said the same thing when I talked to him last night, too. Of course, his interest in the men Jake was working with is a lot more dangerous than the FBI's. I may have some protection from the SSP because I'm Joe's niece and their best shot at recovering the money, but this is the mob we're talking about. They know damn well who the rebels are, but they won't divulge that information, even if it would speed things up. Just let me know what I need to do next. I push my chair away from the desk with a defeated sigh and begin pacing.
Keep your eyes and ears open like you've been doing, kiddo. I'll be in touch once we know more.
He says a quick goodbye, and I click off the call. A moment later, Lena, my best friend and temporary babysitter, pokes her head into my office. Everything okay? Not really. She frowns and steps inside, her blonde hair twisted up into a messy knot that pairs well with her yoga pants and t-shirt. I have on the same pants, but I pulled on a somewhat more presentable top for my class. The two of us have been living like we're at a never-ending slumber party since Jake died and she came to stay with me. Sounds like you were talking to Special Agent Nolan. Not that I was eavesdropping. I half laugh, half snort. Isn't that your job right now, to get all up in my business? She tips her head from side to side, weighing the thought as if I don't know damn well that the FBI gave her strict orders to keep me in sight whenever possible, even in my own house. Yes, but I try to give the illusion of allowing you at least a little privacy. And if she were anyone else, I'd hate her for it. But she's been my closest friend since college, and she already knows everything about me, including what happened with Aiden at the end of my junior year, when my life changed in a single night. He said no. Aw, sweetie. She wraps me up in a sister-like hug. I'm so sorry. It's not like I actually thought he'd agree. Though I'd be lying if I said a small part of me didn't hope he'd at least hear me out before he shot me down. Did he say anything else? She pulls back, her brow creased as she smooths the hair from my face. If he did, Bernie didn't tell me. And it's just as well. I'm not sure my heart can handle hearing all the horrible things Aiden probably had to say about me, most of which are warranted. Do you think Bren could help convince him? I shake my head adamantly. No, I'm not dragging my brother into this any more than I already have. Maybe it's time you told him the truth. The truth, being my 4-year secret relationship with his best friend, which would inevitably lead to the truth about why I ended things. I'm not sure that's something I will ever be able to share with my brother. I can't, I whisper, and Lena doesn't push further. She simply pulls me in once again and lets me cry it out like she's become so good at over the past several weeks, like she did back in college, too. After several minutes, I pull in a deep breath and dry my tears with determination. I've come too far in the past 10 years to fall apart over a man who's probably long forgotten me, a man who was most certainly not the one I'm supposed to be grieving right now. So, did you talk with Wendell? A few minutes later, I pour hot water from the tea kettle into 2 cups in the kitchen. I did, Lena sighs wistfully. I can't believe he'll be home in 2 weeks. I'm excited for you. I smile softly and choose a tea bag from the box, catching her sudden frown from the corner of my eye. What's that look for? I just realized how difficult this must be for you. My husband coming home when yours won't. She bites her lip, but there will be none of that. Don't you dare. Wendell has been overseas for 3 months, and we're going to celebrate that. If anything, I feel bad that I've monopolized so much of her time while he's been away. As an author, she was supposed to be working on her latest manuscript while Wendell finished the last stretch of his contract in Saudi Arabia. Instead, she requested an extension on her deadline and moved in with me when Jake died, partly because she's amazing like that, and partly because the FBI didn't want me to be alone. I know you're angry about what Jake did and the position he's put you in now, but I also know you loved him. He was your partner for a long time. He was, but he wasn't the man I thought he was either. And that's a hard pill to swallow, considering how much I'd opened up to him, how much I'd trusted him. It wouldn't hurt me to think about happier things, you know. I hand her a tea bag and nudge her when she takes it. Like all the wild monkey sex you're going to have when that gorgeous husband of yours gets home. A wide grin stretches across her face. So much monkey sex. Mm-hmm. She and Wendell have been together since we were freshman roommates at the University of Wisconsin, so I know firsthand how they like to make up for lost time. At least I won't be stuck under a pillow on the other side of the room this time, waiting for them to wear each other out. I've already talked with Special Agent Nolan about going home for a few days, Lena says once we're both settled at the table. A few days? Lena, you'll go...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?